Good morning. Well, I don't even know what week we're at in Year of the Bible. Maybe it says it on the bulletin somewhere, but I can't even keep track anymore. One note for the next couple sermons. What we'll be doing is Numbers and Leviticus and Deuteronomy were divided up into a four-week block. So we've got three books over 4 weeks. So the readings go, you know, the first part of Leviticus, and then a little bit of Leviticus, then a little bit of Numbers, end of Numbers, then Deuteronomy, a little bit of Deuteronomy, then the end of Deuteronomy. What we decided to do, since at the end of that time, on November 2nd, we would be hearing from Kevin King and Harvest Mission, what we'll be doing is, last Sunday, the reading was 25 chapters of the 27 in Leviticus. Dave pretty much covered all of Leviticus. I will be covering all of Numbers today, and then Dave next week will be covering Deuteronomy in a broad stroke. So the sermons will be a little bit ahead of the reading, but feel free to follow the reading as it's printed, and then in some ways you'll just be kind of reading Deuteronomy, the rest of Deuteronomy after the sermon's been preached. Maybe that'll be a helpful reading guide for you. And then when Kevin comes, he may touch a little bit on Deuteronomy, but I believe his focus is mainly the Good Samaritan story and the question of who is my neighbor. So just so you know, that's kind of where we're headed the next couple weeks as you follow along with your reading. So we're at Numbers, and Numbers is the fourth book in these five books that some people like to call the Pentateuch, which is the first five books of the Old Testament. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Numbers is the fourth, and if we can kind of see Mount Sinai and the giving of the law as sort of a peak or a crescendo of some of the action that's going on, we have through Genesis and Exodus, the beginning of Exodus, the people leave Egypt, they're on their way to Sinai, they land at Sinai, they receive the law and the covenant, then all through Leviticus, they're here at Mount Sinai, receiving a continuation of the law. And then in Numbers, we kind of have a mirror image of Exodus, in which at the beginning they're still at Sinai and then they head out. So in Numbers, we have the people heading out of Sinai and on their way towards the promised land. I say it mirrors Exodus because it's not simply just in Exodus they get to Sinai, in Numbers they leave Sinai, but there's a lot of other things that are going on that you see in both places. In Exodus, there was a lot of grumbling. There was a lot of complaining. Why did you bring us out here? Why shouldn't we, can't we just go back to Egypt? We had it better off there. Numbers, we hear the exact same thing. We hear, why in the world did you bring us out here? All sorts of grumbling. We hear begging for food and water. God provides in Exodus. God provides in Numbers, and even the water coming from the rock. We see incidents of water coming from the rock in both places. So Numbers is a really interesting one because it has sort of this connection with Exodus. It's the receiving of the law and actually finally working their way towards the next part of the promise, which is the promised land. Now the problem with Numbers in reading it is that there is so many types of writing in Numbers, and if you got into Numbers at all this week, you will have seen that. So we have stories. We have some really fun stories, like Balaam's donkey that starts talking to him after he beats it. The donkey sees the angel in front of them, and Balaam does not. So we have some fun stories like that. We have more laws. We have lists, census lists. We have lists of the tribes of Israel. We have that in two different places. We have travel itineraries, talking about where they're going. We have instructions for worship, like we had in Exodus. We have reports of military battles and victories. We have accounts of legal disputes, of people working out this law that's been given to them in real ways and trying to follow it as best they can, and sometimes doing the complete opposite of following it as best they can. We even have a seating chart, in which they talk about when you set up the tabernacle, here's where all the tribes sit, can't make their camps. So you have seating charts in it. Some commentators who have studied Numbers actually call it the junk drawer of the Old Testament. Because all of these books, the Pentateuch, a lot of historians have kind of made the assumption that all these stories that they've had, that they were telling to each other, they wrote them down when they were in exile in Babylon, and that's kind of when they pulled them all together. They pulled all these stories that they had from their past, and they put them all together. And some commentators think that Numbers was kind of the place that they just threw the stuff they weren't sure where to put it. And so that's why we have this kind of mishmash, and we have a story, and then we have a census, and then we have some laws, and then we have another story, and it's kind of hard to follow. And so as I was reading the book, I heard the people of Israel saying, "Are we there yet?" They leave Sinai, they're in the wilderness for a while, they're on their way to Canaan, and they're grumbling and complaining. Are we there yet? And to be perfectly honest, I said the same thing while I was reading it. Are we there yet? There's a fun story. That was cool. And then all of a sudden we have another census. Oh my goodness. To be perfectly honest, I skipped over a couple pieces. You know those parts where they said, you know, they said the name of the head of the house, and then they had this thing where it says all the men age 20 and above of military age, blah blah blah. And they said that 12 times over. Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I read the name and then I read the number. So I kind of skipped through those parts. The first one I read and then I skipped over. I wanted to get to, you know, whatever was next. I was kind of feeling as lost as the people of Israel were in the middle of the wilderness. It wasn't fun reading. I got impatient. I wanted to get to the promised land just like the people. Once we get there, once we get to the good stuff, then I won't skip. I promise. Once I get to the good stuff. Right now, it's a little much. So it's all right if I skip a little bit. We'll get to the promised land. We'll get to the stories that are a lot more exciting. Then I'll stay with it. Have you ever said to yourself, life's just a little crazy right now? Life's a little bit hectic. I'm feeling a little bit lost. Once things settle down, then I'll fill in the blank. Once things calm down, then I'll take care of this. Then I'll read the Bible a little more. Then I'll pray some more. Then I'll spend more time taking care of my body, patch things up with that coworker. I don't see any hands, but I'm going to assume we've all said that at some point or another. I didn't ask for hands. Life's a little crazy right now. We find ourselves in a wilderness, sometimes on a daily basis, not quite feeling settled, not quite feeling rooted. After work calms down, then I can. After the kids leave the house, then I'll definitely be able to. After I retire, or once the football season's over, then I'll be all right. Once I feel better physically, you know, once I get over this cold, then I'll be all right. Then I can fill in the blank. Any of this sound at least a little bit familiar? The people of Israel are wandering in the wilderness, and they're begging, please, either let us get to the promised land or let us go back to Egypt. And in some ways, that was a slap in the face to God. Think back to the last couple of readings that we had when the whole way back to Abraham, when God made the promise to Abraham, there were two parts to the promise. You will be a great nation and you will be blessed. There was a promise of blessing. So the promise of blessing was you will be blessed, the whole world will be blessed through you. Then when we get to Exodus, God says to Moses, my intention is to free my people. I have heard their cries. I will free them. I will be their God, and they will be my people. I will be their God, and they will be my people. All the instructions then in the second half of Exodus that we saw had to do with making preparations for God. It was building and constructing the tabernacle. It was organizing themselves through their laws as people who would follow God, organizing the priests who would serve the people and serve as mediators between them and, they and God. All of Leviticus had to do with how do we structure our lives? How do we rightly follow God? How do we rightly love God and love our neighbor? And so the people of Israel made this mistake of seeing the promised land and the settledness as being the ultimate goal towards which we are headed, the ultimate part of the promise. And if we see in what God was promising, the promised land was a part of it and would be a part of it as we read on. It is a part of it in the future, but it's just a part of it. God's presence with them in power and in glory was as much a part of the promise. I will be their God. They will be my people. So God is with them. God is a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, leading them. God has a tent that God is present in whenever they camp. And they're missing the point, saying, We're unsettled. We're in the wilderness. We need stable ground. We either need to go to Canaan or we either need to go to Egypt. One of those two things needs to happen. And God's heart breaks. Because God says, I am right here with you. If I got you out of Egypt, if I led you through the wilderness to Sinai, if I conquered your enemies, why are you so obsessed with being settled? If I am here, is that not enough? And so again, we see in the promises, we look back to Abraham's promise and we see that in the first promise, I will make you a great nation. Now, what I think the book of Numbers is doing is saying that first promise is fulfilled. We count some 600,000 men 20 and above or more, not including women and children, boys younger than 20. I think Numbers is testifying to the fact that God had fulfilled one of his promises, the first promise that he would make them a great nation. So they were a great nation. From the very beginning of Numbers, we see that saying, this was a large group of people. This was a great nation. It had structure. It had organization. It had leaders. And the people seemed to forget that. Not only did God lead them out, but he continued on his promises that they would be a great nation and that he would bless them and he would bless the world through them. So then when the spies that are sent out, the 12 spies that are sent out to Canaan to give a scouting report, they go out and they come back and 10 of them say, there's no way we're going to do this. There's no way we're going to make it in there. They're big, strong, scary Canaanites. There's no way that God can lead us through this time and take the land that we were promised. And two came back, two of the 12 came back and said, it's ready. We're ready. So you can imagine, again, God's heart breaking when all of these wonderful acts he has done, when he has done all these things out of a loving relationship, when he established the covenant and the law out of a loving relationship and a desire to deepen that relationship. And then 10 of the 12 come back having lost their trust in God for one reason or another. And the people listen to those 10 and say, yeah, let's go back to Egypt. It was better back there. Essentially saying, we no longer trust God. So what's the response? God's response is to say, this generation, this unfaithful generation, will not see the promised land. I will keep my promise to Israel, but this particular generation will not see the promised land. Again, we see that this relationship is a dynamic one. This is a relationship between God and between God's people that includes pretty severe punishment, but also includes a large amount of grace that God continues with his promise to Israel, that the people of Israel will see the promised land. And possibly grace in the punishment of continuing to wander for 40 more years. When I was talking about the great flood and Noah, I said I had read someone that said, can we read that as an act of grace, that the people were going to lead themselves to their own destruction, and God, through an act of grace, took control of all life on earth? Is it possible that the wilderness is another act of grace, that it's another necessary part of Israel's faith journey? Well, Paul, in 1 Corinthians, he saw it as a warning and a lesson. So in 1 Corinthians 10, 6 through 11, we read, now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in revelry. We should not commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 of them died. We should not test Christ as some of them did and were killed by snakes. And do not grumble as some of them did and were killed by the destroying angel. These things happened to them as examples and were written down for us as warnings, on whom the culmination of the ages has come. So Paul saw it as necessary, not just for Israel at the time, but for the generations to come, that this wandering took place in the wilderness. We see wandering in the wilderness again in the book of Matthew and Mark and Luke with Jesus. If you remember, Jesus was baptized by John. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and God gave him a blessing. This is my Son, in whom I am well pleased. And immediately after that, the Spirit leads Jesus into the wilderness for 40 days of testing. Many people have made this connection between Jesus and Israel, that the people come through the water, the parted waters. Their salvation comes through the parted waters. They come to Mount Sinai. God gives them a blessing that they are God's people. Jesus comes through the river of baptism. He's given a blessing. The people of Israel go for 40 years in the wilderness. Jesus is led into the wilderness for 40 days of fasting and testing. Jesus was blessed by God. He was called out of something special. He was given a task, and yet he still needed to go through testing. The blessing wasn't the end of the story. He needed to go through testing before his work could be accomplished. The Spirit was ensuring that Jesus' allegiance was only and entirely to God, so that his work wouldn't be in vain, so that it would be flowing with the power of the Spirit, the power of God. Israel had work to do too. Israel was to be a blessing to the nations. Through them, all of the nations of the world would be blessed. Perhaps God needed to test Israel because they got to the Jordan River, they looked across, and they said, nope, we're going to go back to Egypt. Perhaps the time in the wilderness, the 40 years in the wilderness, was time of testing, preparing them to be the people that God was calling them to be. And in some ways, we see this in the way the book of Numbers is structured. In the first, I believe it's 25 chapters, we see a pretty bleak view of the people of God. The first chapter is the census. Then we have 24 chapters that paint a pretty bleak picture. And the promise is continued through the next generation. We get to chapter 26 and we have a new census. And the new census is the people that will make it to the promised land. This is the next generation, the generation that continues the promise, the generation that hopefully will be faithful. And this second note has more of a note of hope. There's not as much grumbling. There's not as much disobedience. In fact, you even see people taking advantage of this relationship in a positive way. The daughters of Zelophehad came to Moses and said, look, these laws are great, but there's a missing piece in here because our father died and it says that all of the inheritance needs to go through a male. We're his daughters and we deserve to keep this inheritance and keep it going through his family. And Moses takes this to God and they say, you're right. You're right. So there's this really wonderful negotiating of the law. There's this people that are really taking ownership now of saying, yes, this you gave this to us as a gift. You gave this to us out of a loving relationship, and we in turn are going to we're gonna wrestle with it. We're gonna take it on. We're gonna push a little bit. We're not gonna be disobedient. We're gonna see how we can work this out as we go forward as a people together with our God. So there was a new generation that was taking this on and saying, yes, we're still wandering. We're still in the middle of a wilderness, but we have a God that is with us, that is listening to us, that we can approach, that we can work on our relationship together. So this account from Numbers shows us sometimes we need to be reminded that God is with us in the midst of the craziness. And perhaps sometimes God's even closer than when we're settled. So to connect some things that we saw from previous weeks again, in the second half of Exodus, we saw that this law and the covenant were based on relationship. God's relationship with Israel included an act of salvation, followed by this covenant that was a desire for God's deepening relationship. And I made the link a couple weeks ago with Jesus, who provided our act of salvation and desires deepening in relationship as well. And Dave showed us that the book of Leviticus last week, among other things, points to the notion that God desires obedience. And this relationship and obedience involves every single aspect of life. Our economics, our work ethic, how we worship, how we treat the stranger, how we treat the family member. What to do with crickets in our basement. So today what we learn from Numbers is that God continues to desire this relationship of faithfulness and obedience, and God promises to be present, leading through the wilderness, meaning that responding to God's salvation in love and obedience can't wait until we feel settled. And if God desires obedience in all areas of life, then we must ask ourselves if we're waiting until life calms down a little bit. Are we waiting until life calms down a little bit to read the Bible a little more? To take better care of my money? To take care of my body by getting sleep, eating better, exercising? Am I waiting till things calm down to spend a little more time with my family? Am I waiting till things calm down to make things right between my coworker and I? Am I waiting till things calm down to pray more? So in the midst of grumbling and disobedient Israel, God reaffirms his promise and his presence. His presence, his promise and his presence. And likewise, Jesus promised God's Spirit, echoing the prophet Joel, and the Spirit came and has been leading individuals and the church for 2,000 years. What we learn from Numbers is to not be discouraged by the wilderness. Yes, it is difficult. Yes, it can seem endless. But God is present. God is present, leading and guiding in every decision through the calm and through the storm. God wants us to trust and know that he is with us at all times. At all times. And when we're asking ourselves, are we there yet? We might be missing the point because we're already here.